Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Kind of incredible. The East Coast is apparently facing this apocalypse with Hurricane Irene, while we have got sunny skies and warm weather all weekend. Go figure. On today's program, I'm Michael Cohen here with producer Desi Simmons, by the way. On today's program, the city of Lansing is facing a projected $12 to $15 million deficit for fiscal year 2013. And while it's still a while before we get there, city officials are sounding the warning siren now. And another major tax cut for businesses in Michigan? Yep, that's what Republican lawmakers are calling for. This time, it's the personal property tax that may be on the chopping block, but the Michigan Municipal League says not so fast. But first, Michigan's Corrections Department says that 25% of the state's over 40,000 prisoners are mentally ill, and there needs to be a better way to handle these cases outside of the correction system. To talk about this problem and what can really be done about it, I'm joined by Dan Haynes. He is the director of the Michigan Department of Corrections. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Now, when you say that one out of every four of our prisoners here in Michigan are mentally ill, I'm guessing you don't mean they're depressed. How serious are their conditions?
Well, I think their pathologies, Michael, range from very severe and to less significant. But I think that number is pretty accurate, that we have mental health issues with a lot of those prisoners. They tend to be difficult management problems for us. And when they deinstitutionalize the state hospitals, a lot of those people end up in jails and prisons. And really, that's not a great environment to treat their problems. And it has been a burden for sheriffs and DOC for some time.
And what's the typical approach to dealing with mental illness in prison? Are these folks simply medicated?
Well, I think we've gotten a lot better, Michael, at diagnosing the problem and treating it. We've got a significant number of people, psychologists and psychiatrists and our healthcare delivery people that are focused on dealing with the problems of mental illness. They tend to be coupled with, lots of other problems, but they usually manifest themselves in behavior problems. And yes, medication is part of it, but it also requires special handling by our correctional staff, our security people, and It's really required corrections to improve our delivery of services to those people. And it's high dollar stuff, Michael. So it's a very costly part of our system and DOC.
Well, what percentage of, or how much do you think the corrections department could save if there were other ways to handle these mentally ill prisoners outside of the correction system?
That's a hard number to peg, Michael. I think they tend to drive our per diem costs up significantly. Many of these people require one-to-one supervision. A lot of them are self-destructive folks. They do harm to themselves and to others.
Are they separated from the population then somehow? Or
yeah, they really can't survive very well in the general population, and so you're putting them in isolated circumstances, and that drives the cost. They don't do very well in the general population, and they tend to end up in administrative segregation or places where it's very costly for us to supervise them.
10% of the prisoners are considered seriously mentally ill. Is there really no current alternative for them other than to be in prison?
Well, I make the argument, Michael, that we really need to evaluate diverting some of these folks away from the jails and prisons earlier. That's not to say that there aren't people here who need to be incarcerated and that aren't dangerous, but I do think there's a significant portion of those folks who have ended up in jails and prisons because of their mental illness. And if we make better decisions about how they could be handled in the communities and in mental health systems, I think it could save us all a lot of money. And so I want to entertain the discussion that we need to divert those folks almost at the point of arrest, because once they get into the jails, we're committed to, you know, to having them in an incarceration setting. And that's not therapeutic for a lot of these people. In fact, they get worse, not better.
What would be a good pathway then if you have a mentally ill person who commits a nonviolent crime, such as breaking and entering? How could they be diverted away from the prisons, and what would a good alternative be?
Well, I think the unfortunate truth is we're in a time when resources are stretched to the max, and I think the people that are in the mental health delivery system would say the same thing. I think what we have to do is look at how we're spending our resources and how can we expend them better. And if we can save money in the correctional systems, then we should reallocate some of those dollars to deliver better services on the mental health end. And that's going to take some time and take some thought and some planning. But I think it's the difference between doing tough justice and smart justice. Smart justice is that we start diverting some of those folks into mental health services where they actually belong and have a better chance of recovery.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Dan Haynes. He's the director of the Michigan Department of Corrections. Dan, there's so much that's been made of nonviolent criminals in prison, especially those convicted for things like drug use or sale of drugs. Do you feel that our corrections resources should be focused on violent criminals rather than these types of offenders?
Well, I think we got to do a very careful analysis of that, Michael. I do think that that's one of the things we got to put out on the table and discuss honestly. Comparatively, when you look at other states, it seems as if the length of stay question for Michigan is one that we got to take a look at. I do believe that public safety needs to come first in corrections. We have to be very careful about who we're releasing and who we're holding. And also, what is the benefit in holding nonviolent offenders longer? Are we getting towards our goal, which is to have these people correct their behavior and return to society as productive people? So I think that's one of the debates that we're going to have to engage in if we want to bring the budget and corrections under control. And I think it's one that people need to weigh in on, and the legislature and the governor and all of those people are engaged in that discussion.
I want to ask you about the pending cuts to unionized workers in the correction systems. We've had union reps on the station who say that cuts to employees will make prisons significantly more dangerous and that they already are becoming quite dangerous. What can be done to avoid these types of cuts, and can prisons actually afford to see cutbacks in prison guards and employees?
Well, Michael, I think it's important for me to say that the safety and security of those institutions is my number one priority. I'm not going to recommend anything where we're putting our employees at risk and the public at risk. I do feel the pressing need, though, and I know the legislature does and the governor does, to contain the cost of correction. I understand their frustration. They want to spend money on kids and roads, universities and all kinds of things, and the $2 billion price tag is, in most people's estimation, is too high. And so we have to set about the business of bringing that down to a level that's acceptable. And I'll do that with a great deal of care and caution. I think that the people who work in those institutions, it's one of the they're kind of the unsung heroes of the criminal justice system, and I'm aware of that. I had 34 years in law enforcement, and I appreciate people who are putting, their self in harm's way. So mm-hmm. We're going to do this in a thoughtful way, and I think we can contain some costs. And I do think that we're at a time when we have to share sacrifice. And mm-hmm. and I hope that the unions and the people that represent those feet, those folks in the institutions will agree with me. But, that's going to play out as we go along.
One last question, about a minute left. Yeah. When we look at the ratio of guards to prisoners, are Michigan prisons now more dangerous than they ever have been before?
Well, it's hard for me to, I've been in this job 3 months, and we're looking at staffing levels and seeing if they're appropriate, how they compare state to state. My impression has been I've been to 16 institutions now and I've talked to the people that work in them, wardens, and so on, and I've told them that my my priority is going to be about safety for the staff and for the public. So we're going to be engaged in reviewing those staffing levels, making sure that the, we're keeping people safe. And then, that's just a high priority for me.
Dan Haynes, the director of the Michigan Department of Corrections, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I appreciate it.